Hi there, podcast listeners. Just to let you know that the fabulous Heel Nerds Wrestling Podcast, as well as the Aaron Mehta Network, is also now available on Spotify, Breaker, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and Anchor. Let's get right into it.
This is the Fabulous Heel Nerds Wrestling Podcast.
Yes, yes, y'all. And we are here again. Scott, what podcast number is this?
This is podcast number 8.
You sure about that?
Well, podcast number 2 of the Fabulous Heel Nerds Wrestling Podcast.
The Fabulous... Basically starting again, starting from scratch as the Fabulous Heel Nerds. But that doesn't mean that you can't still listen to all our old shows. And what are the platforms they can listen to that on, Scott?
They are available on Spotify, Radio Public, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Anchor, and of course, the Aaron Mehta Show Network. You can listen to all of our old podcasts on there, as well as these new ones that we're doing.
Yes, yes, yes. We are going to get into Nitro episode 44, a week and one day removed from Bash at the Beach, which was obviously one of the biggest heel turns in professional wrestling. Hulk Hogan turning his back on America and WCW and the youth, becoming a naughty, naughty, naughty man. And we learn more about that today on Nitro.
The birth of the NWO has just happened. And this is where we're really starting to tease what that means. Okay, with hindsight being 2020, the name of this illustrious series we're doing.
Hindsight 2020.
With that being 2020, we can look at what the NWO became. But at this time, if you were watching along with this time, you don't really know where they're going with it. And these first couple of Nitros are where you first start to see the inklings of what the NWO actually means, what Hulk Hogan becoming Hollywood Hulk Hogan actually means for WCW.
He's so Hollywood, he's like 42 and got no hair.
That's how Hollywood is. He started wearing all black as well. Yeah. As we'll see, he appears on this show. He didn't appear on the last one. But he's in all black. He's not yet grown out his black stubble. He's still clean shaven, but he is Hollywood nonetheless.
And what a better place to show the world how evil you are than Disney.
Yes, and MGM Studios, where they've hosted the previous Nitro and then this Nitro. I mentioned in the last episode that the crowd did not seem like a very big wrestling crowd. It looked like a lot of families, and the ratio I gave, I believe, was 80% families, about 20% actual wrestling fans. Firstly, it looked like it had a lot more people there.
It didn't. It had less people there, actually.
Did it? Oh, well, that looked like a lot more because they actually looked like wrestling fans. They actually looked a lot more rowdy and a lot more into what was going
on. You're not
going
to go out... I mean, like, I can understand maybe it being a smaller crowd, but looking more like wrestling fans and looking like they're more into it. Because otherwise, who's going to travel to Disneyland just to watch the wrestling and not be actually there with their family?
I mean, that's a fair point. Is because Disneyland, from what I understand, or Disney World, Florida, in Orlando, from what I understand, is kind of out of the way from the city. So to travel there just to watch wrestling is sort of a big ask.
Yeah, yeah. But you reckon people did it here?
Well, maybe that, or maybe they had like a day outing for wrestling fans at Disneyland.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, go on all the rides and then
went or to watch Nitro. They could have been giving out them their free tickets.
They could, quite possibly could have been given out. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was free to go if you were in Disneyland anyway.
Oh, yeah, it will be, because it costs like hundreds of dollars to go to Disneyland, probably thousands.
Yeah, so it costs a lot of money. So I'm pretty sure that they gave free tickets if you were already at Disney World, Orlando. No sponsors.
Is it not Disneyland?
Disneyland's the one in Paris.
You sure?
Yeah, 100%. Right. I had this conversation with Aaron from the Aaron Mehta Network when we had our meeting.
Yeah.
Because he'd recently been to the one in Florida. That's Disney World. Disneyland is in Paris. Anyway, land or world aside, it starts with Steiner Brothers versus Scott Norton.
Although they actually started, sorry to cut in on you there, mate, but I'm a cock, that's what I do. It actually started with footage from Bash at the Beach. Not just pictures like they had before on the previous episode of Nitro. All they had was still images, which they talked over, Whereas here, they actually had some clips of Hogan dropping that eponymous leg drop on the Macho Man.
So I came up with a little bit of a theory between last podcast and this podcast as to why that was.
Okay, go on.
Okay. I think it was because the pay-per-view had then been replayed on the network from when it was live, if that makes sense. So
you can buy like a second screening of when you bought pay-per-view, can't you?
Yeah, and I think so. Basically, what happened was is obviously there's people bought the pay-per-view, and then when the last Nitro happened, they hadn't done like a broadcasting of it on the TNT network. Whereas by this Nitro, they actually had done a rebroadcast of it. So maybe in the first one they didn't want to show footage because they wanted the people to actually go back and watch it
and pay again to watch it. Or the people that missed it. Okay, right. So the people that probably missed it first time round, they would have a rebroadcasting where you get a chance to buy it again. Yeah. And this is them sort of teasing. Yeah. The show previous was them kind of teasing and reselling the pay-per-view, in essence.
In a way, yeah, like basically saying, right, this is what happened. Whereas by now, they're probably thinking, well, anyone who hasn't seen it isn't going to buy it.
Yeah.
So we need to show it to obviously get
more views.
Yeah, to get people.
Yeah. Higher rating.
Yeah. Views is a modern term.
That's very much the YouTube generation. But yeah, the Nielsen ratings, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Higher ratings.
So maybe that was my theory anyway as to why they didn't show the actual footage in the one before. And
I'll go with that. I'll say that as gospel.
But they showed the footage in this at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm, they did.
Right after that, we've got the Steiner Brothers versus Scott Norton and Ice Train.
Fire and ice. Fire.
Excuse me.
Excuse you.
Fire and ice.
Scott, tell me everything you know about Scott Norton.
About Scott Norton?
Yeah.
He's a long distant relative to William Norton.
Who's William Norton?
A ice hockey player.
Oh, right, okay.
He's also second cousin to Edward Norton, the actor.
I have a feeling you're bullshitting me slightly there, mate.
Not at all. Tell me everything you know about Scott Norton.
Okay, he was a former professional arm wrestler, and he was in the film Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone.
Wow, really?
Yeah, see, you did find that interesting. You love cheesy shit 80s films, and Over the Top is one of the best of the cheesy shit 80s films.
It is, and I did do research, just to preface the rest of the episode, it's just I didn't do research for every single wrestler.
And Scott Norton bodyguarded Prince at one point.
Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a varied career.
Like he's a big old unit, Scott Norton. He's got to be up there. He's got to be three bills, and Ice Train, no little person wrestler himself. Like he's a big old unit as well.
Yeah, big. Both teams pretty big in this. I mean, the Steiner brothers weren't exactly known for being small.
No. These are four big old boys.
Yeah, as I mentioned in the last episode, Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott Steiner. Definitely becoming my favourite tag team of this area. Just Rick Steiner's constant, ho, 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 ho. I just love it. Can't get enough. I think it's brilliant.
And obviously, Scotty, known for his suplexes, but anytime you see some big men like Scott Norton and Ice Dream being suplexed, like I said, being up there over 300 pounds, obviously he's a big old unit himself, Scott Steiner, but every time you see those over the head, belly to back suplexes on men that large, I cringe.
Yeah.
I really do like when you see him just getting the heads over.
Well, did you know what fucking Scott Steiner's signature move used to be? Or his finisher used to be?
Frankensteiner.
The Frankensteiner. No, before then. The screwdriver pile driver.
I may have seen this. Talk us through it, Scott, logistically.
It's fucking amazing, but oh my God, is it dangerous. So you have a man up in a vertical suplex position.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than suplex him over, you twist and drop him down into a sit-out pile driver. So a sit-out tombstone pile driver.
Yeah.
So where you go straight onto your ass.
Mm-hmm.
With his inverted. So yeah. It goes from a vertical suplex position, so the guy's legs are right up in the air, just drops him down and catches him at the last minute and puts him into a sit-out pile driver.
That's cool. He's got control the entire time. Yeah, when you're doing these,
dangerous.
It's very dangerous, but when you're doing these over-the-head suplexes, so belly to belly, for example, a belly to belly suplex, Brock Lesnar style. So you're throwing somebody over your stomach, over your back, over their own head onto their back. Like, if you don't get these big boys up and over, and they don't jump, so easily they could be paralyzed.
Yeah, and you often see when they land wrong, and you often see when they land on their head, and it's brutal to see.
It just when you see those big boys getting suplexed like that. When Brock Lesnar's throwing around Seth Rollins, ain't but a peanut. You know what I mean? He can just throw that around as much as he wants.
Yeah.
This is a big man throwing around another big man, and every time I watch that, I literally cringe my face. But nobody got paralyzed.
No one got paralyzed in this match. Again, a brutal match. Not the most fantastic opening match.
Fire and Ice were over. People seem to like Fire and Ice.
Yeah, people liked it, but it's not the most fantastic opening match in terms of wrestling. It was a brutal match. And it was okay. It was fairly.
They were.
Decent.
What do you say that them big lads? Even if they can or they can't wrestle, they're an attraction just due to being so big and impressive.
Yeah, which was sort of a, and still is now in wrestling, but was definitely
not as much.
Yeah, definitely a popular thing at the time for wrestling companies is to like look at the fucking size of this guy that we've got in the ring, and look at the size of these four guys that we got that are launching each other about, and it is impressive to behold.
Yeah,
and some decent wrestling. Again, not the most brilliant technical open match you've ever seen, but good enough to start.
Did you recall the ending? Let me talk you through it.
Talk me through it.
So Steiner's win, yeah, and Ice Train splashes Scott Norton by mistake.
Oh, so yes.
He splashes his partner, and then they do a big old suplex on Ice Train, and then pin Ice Train, get the three count, they get their hands raised, even though the legal man was Scott Norton.
Yeah, so it's sort of a...
And Schiavone even makes a crack about it. He says something like, well, I don't believe that Ice Train was a legal man, but I suppose that's in the history books now. And they just like completely give the Steiners that win, even though they clearly pinned the wrong man.
Yeah.
Once again, I think this is legitimately the, I wouldn't say it's the ref being dumb, but the ref kind of had to call that one, must have had to call that one on the fly.
Yeah, going, what am I going
to
do?
What do I do now? I'm going to have to just, they would have had to make that decision, you know,
on the spot, like that. Yeah. So after that, we have an interview with Kevin Sullivan, Big Bubba Rogers as well. They only just really bring up beef from Bash at the Beach here. We remember the interview that they had in the last show with Kevin Sullivan, where he was stood there with Giant, or the Big Show, as I think we accidentally refer to him occasionally. He's known as the Giant here.
Yes.
He kind of brings up Chris Benoit, but not really, and he's more talking about NWO and Hogan's turn and stuff. This is the first time that he properly brings up the beef and the storyline that he has with Benoit in this little interview, which I found interesting to see, because in the modern era, you wouldn't see them as much rehashing storylines from two weeks ago had it not been...
They would probably just move on.
Yeah, had it not been mentioned the week before.
Yeah.
You know, they would probably move on to something else. And it was interesting to see that sort of style of writing where they're going, well, no, we need to get back to this, so you're going to have to mention it on this show.
No, because otherwise people will have been wondering, surely.
Yeah, I'm sure people would have been like, well, what's going on with that?
Yeah.
So which I think WCW stopped caring whether people were wondering what the fuck was going on after a while.
But oh, yeah, most certainly.
But at this time, they still did care about, you know, if people followed the story.
Well, this is obviously pre Vince Russo getting anywhere near it. So.
Yeah. But let's not jump ahead of ourselves. And now after that, we have Dean Malenko, man, constantly coming out with the best matches on the card. Dean Malenko versus a young Billy Kidman.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Jimmy Hart was with Billy Kidman here, yeah?
Yeah, Jimmy Hart seems to be managing everyone. They just seem to be sticking Jimmy Hart with, like, everyone and his mother. Just get Jimmy Hart
It's
out
not
there
something
with
you see it any longer, is it? Like, somebody manages, like, several multiple people.
Yeah, you don't really see it.
Don't see that any longer.
And it's weird because we talk a lot about, sort of, things that happen in matches and stuff that's done to progress story. Whereas I think Jimmy Hart being put out with multiple wrestlers is done to progress character more than it is story.
Yes.
Because for all intents and purposes, this man managing multiple wrestlers doesn't really make that much sense. You know, because...
Well, you're like, yeah, why doesn't it? Like, if you look at what a manager actually is or does, so like a manager of a fighter or a manager of a band, they manage multiple fighters. They manage multiple bands. Even in the fighting world, for example, like the person who manages Conor McGregor also did manage Michael Bisping and loads of other fighters who might have.
But what's
like Don King would manage Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas, for example.
What's the likelihood that those two would then compete against each other with the same manager, though?
It does happen. That happens in the fight world, for example, all the time.
Okay, well, maybe because I'm looking at it from more perspective in storylines. It's like, well, what's going to happen?
It's a conflict of interest, so that's something that you could introduce later because it's a conflict of interest. You're not buying it.
It is true. I just think maybe I'm just too used to seeing the man, like, say, a Paul Bearer, you know, who when he goes to manage someone else, it's when he screws over The Undertaker and goes to manage Kane.
Yeah.
And it's used as a big screw job. Bit. Whereas if Jimmy Hart's managing multiple wrestlers, he's not really ever going to be screwing anyone over because he's got interests in both parties.
Yeah.
If that ever came to light that he was managing, if two people that he managed had a match together.
Well, that maybe that does happen down the line. We'll have to wait and
maybe
see.
Maybe it is. We'll find out. But yeah, so Jimmy Hart seems to be managing everyone.
Yeah.
During the match, again, bro, such a good technical match. Like, the pace and it's really high. Billy Kidman's quite young here. Mm-hmm. He's still in, like, sort of the gear that's tights and he's got short hair. He's not yet in his stuff that he became famous for, which was the jean shirts and vest. He does a shooting star press and misses. Mm-hmm. Which Tony Schiavone doesn't really know what to call. He calls it an inverted moonsault or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure shooting star press was a long time before.
Oh, well, it will have been, but it probably wasn't well known to the Southern wrestling crowd.
No.
Like, it's a lucha move, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's...
I don't know how much was Tony Schiavone up on his lucha libre, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I found that quite interesting.
There was a cool corner reversal, I forget what it's called, but you know when you whip somebody into the corner and you do the spot where you kind of, you kick your body and your legs up over and the idea is you're jumping over them.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're gaining space. But Malenko catches his heels... And he gets him into like a brutal Alabama slam.
Yeah.
Which was a nice spot. That's not something you see very often.
No, I think Malenko...
Knows every reversal out there, though, doesn't he?
I think Malenko's definitely, from a wrestling fan point of view, like cementing himself as that out-and-out, full-on wrestler here. Because he's, you know, this is three shows in a row, including the pay-per-view, where he's just had outstanding matches.
So, like, you can see a lot of Bret Hart in him, really, can't you?
Yeah. It's like Bret Hart turned up to 11 on like the pace scale.
Yeah, because he's smaller.
Yeah, because he's smaller and he's like just so explosive as well with his work and punches and stuff like that just got so much power behind them.
Yeah,
and a lot of snap in everything he does, which I really enjoy to see. It was a brilliant match.
But he needed that mouthpiece though, really, didn't he, with Jimmy Hart?
Ooh, Billy Kidman?
No, Malenko.
Malenko was being managed. Billy Kidman was being managed by Jimmy Hart here, wasn't he? Dun, 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 dun. Fact checking.
Don't know, mate. One second, let's find out.
Jesus Christ. The Ever Professional podcast.
Wait, is it?
We changed names, we didn't change our levels of research, clearly.
We've not even had a drink today, either.
No.
Here we go. Dean Malenko defeats Billy Kidman. Doesn't say.
Doesn't say. Brilliant. Fantastic. The ever insightful.
Anyway, we like Dean Malenko.
We like Dean Malenko. He never really became as big a star as his wrestling could have allowed him to be.
He didn't have the chance, I don't think, in that era. Those small men didn't really get that much chance. That's one of the reasons Jericho left for WF. You know what I mean?
He never really had the chance, and I think the small chances that he did have, the fact that he wasn't really much of a personality in front of the camera didn't make...
Didn't make it easy,
and it didn't make sort of the casual wrestling fans really gravitate.
No, he was a wrestler's wrestler, wasn't he?
Yeah, but it was good. Who got the win on that one?
Malenko with a cloverleaf.
Malenko with a cloverleaf after a series of brutal moves. You see, like a double underhook powerbomb. Mm-hmm. He just keeps... It's almost reminiscent of styles that we see now, where there's like 20 impactful moves at once.
Mm-hmm.
but thankfully, you know, Billy Kidman, for one, doesn't have time to sell any of them because Dean Malenko's just picking them up and almost taps out almost immediately in the Cloverleaf because he's in such pain from the anguish he's just been put through.
Feels, yeah.
Yeah, then after that we have...
Some NFL dude, I put.
Kevin Green, NFL player interview. He's upset about Hogan? Upset about Hogan, says that he was a Hulkamaniac and that he took his vitamins, said his prayers, and now he's been let down. Kevin Green, he had a few short stints in WCW. Mm-hmm. They were kind of on and off. He mainly tagged with other former NFL players or had feuds with them.
He was looking for Mongo McMichael, basically, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, so in his career, here he's looking for Steve Mongo McMichael. So he either really feuded against other former NFL players or would tag with them, like he tagged with Goldberg at one point as well. And it was really sort of a stop, start, nothing career. I think in this he mentions that he was at the training camp, so he was at the power plant, and that he didn't want to wait until his training was over. He was out
that was his thing, and he was like, "I've got to get the plane back to practice."
Yeah,
but I need to find Mongo before I do this. I'm gonna find him, and I'm gonna give him what for.
Yeah, and it was just. I'm sorry.
He had a lot of spunk and balls.
To any NFL fans out there, I apologize. But whenever any sort of cross sport storylines like this come up, as someone who isn't an NFL fan per se, I mean, I don't mind it, but I don't know it well enough to really find this intriguing or captivating in any way.
But no, but you can imagine it would be for. I mean, put it in perspective. I don't know what team Kev Green played for or how big that team were, but like, what's this, 1996?
Yeah.
What if somebody like, I mean, I don't know how big this guy was as a star, but let's say if it was somebody the caliber of like a 1996 Eric Cantona coming into wrestling, would that not be interesting or captivating for you?
Yeah, it would be. It would definitely, of course it would be. But, you know, as someone who doesn't know much about the NFL, if anything at all about the NFL or their players, nonetheless, I don't find it that captivating.
Personally. No, but it will have been for the US crowd, though.
Yeah, of course it would have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't fake that I can't fake that interest, can I?
I'm just trying to put yourself in the mind of somebody else for once.
I am, and I know why it is, but I can't then myself get excited.
You can't make
it.
Yourself give a fuck, basically.
I did enough fucking research into who he matched with and what his wrestling career was like, you know, so.
Well done, mate.
There you go.
Take Kev that Green, Scott Norton. Scott's hero, Kev Green.
My hero, Kev Green. Next up, we had Harlem Heat versus Rough and Ready.
Yeah,
we had Sherry and Colonel Parker at ringside again. This was probably a downer on the whole show. I didn't think this was a very good match.
I mean, so Rough and Ready, Dick Slater and Mike Enos. Can't say I did much research on them, to be honest. But I like Harlem Heat.
Yeah, I like Harlem Heat as well. Probably contesting up there with the best wrestling entrance music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did you like the way they were called Harlem Heat, even though they were from Houston, Texas?
Yeah. You know why that is?
Why is that?
Because they were portrayed to be from Harlem and were supposed to be these...
From the streets, like...
From the streets, yeah.
Yeah. Which they were from the streets, just the streets of Houston.
Yeah.
He was a naughty boy, wasn't Houston, he, Booker, Houston back in the day?
Heat. Houston Heat doesn't really have the same ring either. No. Everyone knows Harlem and knows it for its streetness and its roughness.
For its streetness and its roughness.
Yeah. I didn't really like this match that much. I think because the ending is Sherry kisses Dick Slater for the distraction.
Sherry kisses Dick.
Sherry mouths Dick Slater for the distraction. And
she proper cops with him as well. Like she wasn't... Obviously, it's Sherry Martel, for Christ's sake. She's obviously not shy. She's a legend of women's wrestling and valeting.
Yeah.
You know, sensational Sherry, but like, she looks like she proper tongues him.
Yeah, she really went for it, and then afterwards he's apparently stunned by a lady's kiss.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know if he was like a secret gay or what, but like, he was like...
What?
He was really disgusted, like he was spitting and stuff, wasn't he, that she cops with him. And he was like spitting and showing disgust, wasn't he?
Oh, right. I think
that Sherry like kissed him. He had disgust, and he was spitting and Like he had a bad taste in his mouth.
Yeah, so it's just a distraction. It was what it was. It's wrestling. These things happen occasionally. It just seemed fucking stupid, in all honesty. After that, we've got a Rey Mysterio package, which if you weren't a fan of Rey Mysterio Jr. before, you would be after that package because it was incredibly impressive.
You're a fan of Rey Mysterio's package.
I am a fan of Rey Mysterio's package. Shown all of his highlights from the last sort of, well, from really from Bash at the Beach and then the previous Nitro, as he's the new
Cruiserweight
champion.
So they're clearly starting to push him here, obviously.
After that, we have women's wrestling. Did you remember that was a thing? I'd forgot that was a thing, watching these two shows, women's wrestling.
Yes, it was nondescript women's wrestling. Nobody had any intros. They were already in the ring. I believe the match was possibly already underway. And like they just the match started partway through. And they had no entrances.
Yeah, and it was, wrestling-wise, it was a fairly decent match. It was Medusa against...
Osaka.
Malia Hosaka.
Oh, I didn't know. She had a first name.
Yeah, and it was a fairly decent match. Medusa,
short.
Very short. Medusa, obviously famous for trashing the WWF women's title when she first arrived to WCW, which happened in the 1995, October of 1995, obviously a long time previous to this. The commentary, even though it's a decent match, the commentary is kind of blatantly sexist. A couple of good quotes here is, "A couple of women here you can't keep in the kitchen."
That's wow, who said that?
Bob, who do you think said that?
Shivani?
Bobby Heenan.
Oh, the brain. Oh, the right, okay.
So yeah, he says that. He also says, "Here's a tip for you. Once you find a woman who doesn't answer back, keep her forever." You know,
wow.
just fucking really horrendous 1996 male chauvinism on, you know, what is actually a pretty good match for all intents and purposes. We have the weird countdown thing again to the
hour
second
two.
Hour.
Yeah.
It strikes just at the end of the match after Medusa gets the win. So WCW, women's wrestling on it, actual women's wrestling as well, even though they sort of berated it and shit all over it on the commentary side of things.
It wasn't just tits and ass, was
it? Yeah, it wasn't just tits and ass, it was actual wrestling.
Yeah.
After that, we have Eric Bischoff back again. No fucking explanation as to where he was at Bash at the Beach. Still not just going to breeze.
We're just going to brush over that.
Breeze straight over the fact you were missing and no one knew where the hell you were. Yeah, you're just back now wearing his Disneyland t-shirt. You know, on his commentary position.
Yeah.
And then
who's this up in the rafters again?
Yeah, or not quite the rafters, but the roof of the entrance to Disneyland.
Yeah.
We got Hall and Nash who've displayed some NWO banners over the WCW.
The big metal WCNW. Yeah. They've just put like bed sheets over it that look like it's been spray painted on.
Yeah, which it has. And just to give you a bit of visual for this, they're sat. The entrance to the theme park is right where they have the wrestling, and the bleachers are sort of in front of that, and the entrance to the theme park sits higher than the bleachers, so they sat on that overlooking the wrestling, and they've got this big NWO banners over the WCW letters, and they're just sat up there drinking and watching what's going on.
It looked pretty cool, actually.
It did look pretty cool. I thought this was quite impressive.
You can see like the Magic Kingdom in the background as well, can't you?
Yeah. So
Looks really cool. And if you Hall actually does the old two sweet sign, he does like, you know, like the little two fingered index finger and little finger.
Devil horns.
Devil horns, or the two sweet as it's known now. He does that. Obviously, the Click were doing that a little bit back in back earlier that year in WF television, and here it is, I believe, for the first time on WCW.
Yeah,
television.
This segment is really what's starting to set up. We said this at the beginning of the show and mentioned it in the last show as well. It's starting to set up what the NWO is actually all about.
What they stand for.
What they stand for and what they're trying to do, which is take over. And I think all the mentions of them, especially in the other interviews and other promos by WCW wrestlers, is really laying the groundwork for what they're actually doing with the NWO. And this whole them being on the roof, putting banners over the actual WCW sign. I think it's at that moment, if you were watching this without the hindsight we have now, you'd be like, oh, that's what they do. They're actually taking over. They're going to try and take over WCW. I mean, which if you dig too deep into, you think, well, how can they actually do that? I mean, surely they could just stop being employed by WCW, you know?
Yeah, but they're invading. They're not employed. They're just invading they're taking over.
Yeah, it's invading.
Yes.
Just like, oh, I try to invade my own. I wonder if you were in any other position of work, any other job, and you decided to start trying to take over the company you worked for.
Lloyd's Bank, my God, they're invading NatWest.
how that would work. Just a load of employees just start saying, like, you know, I'm taking over this company. Like, how are you going to do that? I'm going to spray paint the sign outside. So I think you'll be fired.
You'll be locked up as well, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, so interesting work. Interesting world of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the setup. Right after that, we've got Arn Anderson versus Meng.
Yes.
Who is also being managed by Jimmy Hart here.
Yes, yes. It's Dungeon of Doom. He's Dungeon of Doom, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's like Dungeon of Doom. I'm not sure at this point because obviously we are doing research into each of the wrestlers here. Story-wise, I'm trying to keep myself in the moment.
Yeah.
And even though we have all the perspective of we do now of what happens, and we have been mentioning it quite a bit, I'm trying to keep myself in the moment in terms of knowing exactly what's going on. And a byproduct of that has been that...
If you do too much research, you'll ruin it for yourself.
Yeah, well, a byproduct of that has been with Dungeons and Doom. I don't actually know how many people are in Dungeons of Doom.
The Dungeon of Doom.
The Dungeon of Doom.
No, me neither. So you've got Giant, Kevin Sullivan, Meng.
Big Bubba.
Bubba. That's a fair size stable already.
Yeah. It just watching this sort of as it unfolds and all these different people coming out being part of that stable, you think you just get it's like Jesus Christ, I'm you know, who needs an NWO? You've got
more members there already.
The Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah.
You know, get them up on the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so another sort of weird finish. Barbarian comes out.
Yeah, he looked like he kind of forgot to come out with Meng. Oh, yeah, and Barbarian, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
But he looked like he came out late. Like, he came out halfway through the match and then just stood there like a bloody lemon in the background.
Yeah, he's like,
oh, shit, did I forget to come out at the beginning?
Because you thought he'd come in and, like, do some sort of, like, interfering, but he didn't really. He just came out
like a lemon.
Yeah. I did notice at this point it was distracting. It's 1996. There was a man on a massive fucking phone in the crowd right dead centre in front of the hard cam. You know,
yeah, like a big Wall Street-esque kind of mobile phone.
Yeah. I did say that this show had a lot more, seemingly had a lot more real wrestling fans than the previous show.
Mm.
But this stood out as just like, why is he on his goddamn massive phone while this match is going on?
Because he's got some business to attend to, clearly.
Yeah.
Business.
Clearly. Hall and Nash, this is what they're sat overlooking all the action. Drinking their beer. They've got like, it looks like they've set up camp up there.
Yeah.
And also strangely, they're plugging in a really weird way that Hogan's film Mr. Nanny is premiering on TV that week.
Yeah.
And it's weird how they have to do it because obviously Hogan made that film when he was still, you know, the all-American Hulk Hogan. But now he's Hollywood Hulk Hogan and he's a heel. So they have to say it's something, he words it something along the lines of, even Hulk Hogan, what's he done now? I mean, they've got Nanny premiering on TV this week and not that they'd be interested in that anymore. Only on TBS.
But we have to.
We have plug, to mention that.
We have to plug
yeah,
this.
So it's kind of an awkward plug.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to, you know, just like.
I mean, I don't know why you'd want to watch that, but you should watch it because we're getting paid to tell you to do so.
I don't know why you'd want to watch that anymore. Coming this week on TBS at 9 p.m. on
yeah
so it's quite that made me laugh a bit. I believe Arn Anderson got the win. I didn't mark it down here for some reason.
Oh, bloody hell, Scott. Meng got the win with distraction from the Barbarian, and he gives what they usually call a savat kick, so like a super kick.
Yes I remember that.
Yeah, which is not what a savat kick is at all. If you didn't know, Scott, savate is French kickboxing. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Learn something new every day.
It's kickboxing, but they wear hard shoes.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, you don't see it that much on television.
No.
Because it's brutal.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
After that, we got an interview with Steve Mongo McMichaels and Deborah.
Yes.
Kind of following on with that NFL feud with Kevin Green. Basically, Steve Mongo Michaels making himself look like a shithouse heel because he's conveniently showed up right after Kevin Green's had to get his flight home.
Yeah, very convenient.
Yeah, Mongo Michaels being the newest member of the Four Horsemen at this time as well. So yeah, interesting developments.
Deborah obviously wittering on, but she says something to Kevin Green like, "You need to go back to where you're training and beat up all them farm boys," or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, what is she going on about?
Yeah, even Mean Gene sort of just says, farm boys,
well,
okay.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about? You're the most country-ass hillbilly there is in wrestling.
Yeah.
Farm boys.
Yeah, so fascinating stuff there. It's nice to see, I think, all the little storylines developing. And, you know, the little... Just the side storylines along with the main storylines that they're going with. And as you know, as wrestling fans, not always do these storylines go anywhere. So I think it'll be interesting to see over this series how many of these storylines actually get dropped, how many of them just don't go anywhere, never mentioned again, such as the Eric Bischoff thing, you know, who just shows up again, don't say where he was or what he was doing.
What was he doing?
So it's just sort of, I think at the time, if you're watching it, you'll just be like, oh, well, and then just move on. You know, you're not going to tell your hair out about where he was. But when you're watching things back like this, you're thinking, well, why didn't they mention where he was? And, you know, especially if you're maybe doing a podcast like we are and you're sort of going out there to be a little bit snarky about stuff and, you know, try and...
We try and stay positive, though. We try and pick holes
and just have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
You know, you notice all the little things like that. And I think these like little mini storylines, even if it is with an NFL player who I, you know, expressed my lack of interest in, I think it's going to be good to see where they go and what happens, what storylines they drop, what storylines that develop into things that we know well and become famous. You know, see where it all goes. After that,
next up, Benoit versus Eddie.
Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero.
Eddie once again, over like Rover.
Yeah. Got an impressive mullet and tash combination.
He's he couldn't look more Mexican if he tried, could he?
No, he couldn't. Yeah, he looks very, very 1996 Mexicana. Good match. You know, they became famous for having brilliant matches in WCW and before. And then after Benoit and Eddie Guerrero.
I really liked, it sounds weird thing to mention, but I really liked Benoit's body type in this era. It was before, because when he was in WWE, he was so jacked that he could, you know, obviously he could move and he moved well, but like it looked hard. When he had that much muscle packed on here, he was muscular, but it was before he got ridiculously ripped to the gills.
He got the point where he'd looked like it was almost uncomfortable. Like it wasn't really him. It was like an uncomfortable suit he was wearing.
Yeah.
Whereas here, he's a lot smaller.
I mean, he still had big biceps and like, you know, like he looked like athletic and muscular as opposed to just being ballooned up.
Yeah. So, yeah. And he worked a lot. He seemed to work a lot quicker at this time. I mean, he is younger as well.
Yeah.
So he worked a lot quicker. Still had that same intensity that you always had. Eddie Guerrero as well, you know, that same sort of intensity that they were famous for, but just a lot smoother in this sort of era. Probably
a young rabid Wolverine.
Yeah,
very not young. Completely full of the rabies.
Yeah, we have another interference in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Malenko comes out, does a weird clatter thing, and then
does a weird what now?
Like he clatters them, kind of.
He clatters them.
Yeah.
Meaning what?
Like he just bangs into them. He clatters them. What do you mean?
He clatters. I've never heard anybody described as clattering.
Clattering, to clatter something. Right. So he smacks into them really hard, basically, without any grace whatsoever.
Right.
That's
like
what
a bumble. He bumbles into them.
He bumbles into them with intent. Right. He bumbles into them with intent. Very hard. This leads to Guerrero getting the win via a count out.
Yeah.
Which is a bit strange. I thought they could have done even with
the interference. But it protects both of them though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It's got the It protects both of them in terms of...
Doesn't make Benoit look any stronger, doesn't make Eddie look any stronger or weaker. Doesn't make either of them look any weaker, which is the important thing, because you want to keep Benoit strong because that's the spot that he's earned. And likewise for Eddie, like, it protects them both, which is important.
Yeah, it does. I think maybe there could have been a bit of a cleverer way to do that. Obviously, hindsight 2020.
Mm-hmm. How would you have done it, Scott? Scott, go on. Book some wrestling. How would you have done it?
How would I have done it? So, Malenko comes in for the distraction.
Yeah.
Okay. He distracts Benoit on the apron.
Right.
Benoit punches Malenko to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie turns around, gives a drop kick to Benoit.
Right.
Benoit goes down. Eddie pins Benoit on the floor.
Right. On the floor outside of the ring.
On the floor outside of the... Yes, on the floor outside of the ring. So right. Benoit, Eddie Guerrero goes to the outside.
Right.
Doesn't pin him on the outside of the ring, sorry. Picks him up, rolls him back in, goes for the pin. Malenko distracts the ref again whilst there's an interference with someone else on Benoit, and then Eddie gets the victory. So Benoit basically looks like he's been screwed over from all sides. But then I suppose it does...
But
it
that
does,
still, but that makes Eddie look like a bad guy.
Yeah.
You're not going to be booking wrestling anytime soon, are
how
you,
could
Scott?
You just asked me to book wrestling on the fly. Jesus Christ.
Conrad Scott Thompson again.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not saying I could book it any better. You know, you can make observations about stuff and say it's not the greatest finish of all time. It was a great match.
Surely yeah. They would know more than you, though.
All right, fine. Fucking hell. It was the best finish I've ever seen.
I just like winding you up, mate.
Right, so after that, we've got Big Bubba versus Lex Luger.
Yeah, for the TV title.
For the TV title. When did they retire the TV title? Do you know?
I don't believe they did. Did they? When WCW was bought.
Was it retired by WWE then?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because basically it was kind of like the IC title, but for WCW, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Because it never had the prestige of the Intercontinental title.
No, I don't believe it did. Like, I mean, I'm not too sure of the lineage of said TV title. I mean, I don't know if that was a thing back in NWA.
Yeah.
Or that was something that was just bought for WCW. So, like, it was probably less than 10 years old.
I think, in a way, it's little things like this that would ultimately end up in the sort of demise of WCW, in a way. So,
right. Go on. Divulge.
Say they don't have the Intercontinental Championship title's history. So there's no prestige around that certain championship. So eventually, matches just become matches for matches' sake, despite the title.
Yeah.
Because the title's just sort of, not a throwaway title, but doesn't have the history or the importance.
Like, the US title has a long lineage back to the early 70s. I believe Harley Race was the first one.
Yes.
Yeah, like, so that's got a real history and a real lineage of great matches within the NWA canon. Whereas... TV title, once again, we've not done our bloody research on this one, but I don't believe it's anywhere near as old or prestigious.
No, and like, say, the real big title, obviously, is a WCW title.
Yeah.
Because it's the old NWA title, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, so that's the big gold belt.
That's the big gold belt that everyone fights for, and that's the big sort of aim.
Yeah.
But not every single wrestler is going to be battling for that.
No,
so
can't be.
Outside of that storyline... stuff has the potential to then perhaps be a little bit stale. I also think a similar thing to WCW's sort of version of WrestleMania, if you like, is Starrcade.
Yeah.
But also Starrcade...
Which predates WrestleMania, actually. But
it predates it, but they never built up the sort of fanfare or spectacle around it as WrestleMania.
No, wrestling was very different when Starrcade first came out in 83. You know what I mean? It's like, it didn't have the... pop culture significance.
No, it didn't. So then, in a way, even though it's their biggest pay-per-view of each year, it's just kind of the same as all the other pay-per-views. Therefore, like, say, with WrestleMania is essentially a reset button on storylines almost every year, or can be. Whereas WCW never had that, so they're resetting and restarting storylines at all different points, and then when Starrcade comes around, it doesn't mean as much as, say, a WrestleMania would, so it doesn't have that attraction to outside or casual wrestling fans.
It's not the be-all and end-all. It's not the Super Bowl. It's not the ultimate culmination, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
because not everything is always leading toward that.
Yeah, and not everything is always leading towards something. So some storylines and some wrestlers even will always be running towards a goal that doesn't really exist. That makes sense? Whereas every wrestler...
They're not necessarily working... Every wrestler is working towards being at WrestleMania.
Yeah, every wrestler, if nothing else, they can... Their end goal can be...
I want to be on that card.
I want to be on WrestleMania because it's the most prestigious thing in the industry and in the sport. Whereas with WCW, not all wrestlers have that. So the storylines can often dissolve into nothingness, which we know that they did a lot of the time, or run for too long and they've run their course and then they get pushed
even
further.
And they peter out.
Or like other things, like say with the NWO, where they just end up, for lack of any better ideas, repeating themselves over and over and over again. It's a little bit of a tangent going on here, but I was thinking about this today, about why it's the potential, other than just ratings and money, why WCW maybe didn't do as well as they could have done. Obviously,
because of structure.
Because of structure, basically, and not just structure in terms of, you know, staff and, you know, we hear all the horror stories.
No, but I mean narrative structure.
Yeah, but narrative structure, or like even just a fallback. You know, like say in WWE, WrestleMania can just be a fallback if nothing else for certain storylines. If certain storylines,
what do you mean fallback?
So say if storylines are running their course,
right,
and a storyline peters out. At WrestleMania, they can hit a reset button on it and be like, right, this happens, new storyline, and it's happened at a really big event.
Yeah.
And WWE is also guilty of just dropping storylines, especially in recent years. But back in this time, everything was a lot more structured.
Mm-hmm.
And WCW, aside from obviously their lack of organization in terms of production and actually putting shows together...
Mm-hmm.
What they had to work with their pay-per-views and with their titles, maybe didn't bring in as many outside eyes as a lot of the stuff WWE did.
I'd go with that. I mean, this kind of changes in the coming years from 96 onwards. That does change a bit with regards to eyes on. Like, they start bringing the celebrities a lot more in.
Yeah.
As the 90s go on, for example, you know, Dennis Rodman and people like that.
Yeah. But it always seemed really slapdash, because like say they would.
Right, we'll just throw him in here. He's a big Diamond Dallas Page fan. We'll just put him on telly.
Yeah, they would often do like so. What should be potentially huge stories.
They didn't take as much time with their angles.
Yeah,
say.
And they'd often do huge angles and have huge celebrities or whatever outside of pay per views. So it would just be for a Monday Nitro, which everyone can watch.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't always build up to this huge event's going to be happening only at, you know, the biggest show of the year. It's going to be, oh, this randomly happened on a Monday night, you know, when everyone
they'd
was
do
watching.
That for the Monday night ratings.
Yeah, so then it obviously, as we know, their Monday night ratings sort of, in a weird way, became like a track division for Eric Bischoff and WCW.
Right.
And became like this real... This is what we're aiming
for.
We need better ratings. We need better ratings and not always looking at the bigger picture. And I think, going back to what I was saying before, things like titles and prestige and, you know, theatrics and big spectacles weren't always there. They were there, but not always there in the right place at the right time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Nice point. Few points made there, mate.
Few points made. Good. I was thinking to myself today about why, other than obviously the loss in the ratings war and the horrific writing that eventually happened, why WCW maybe.
But that's
didn't
all in
have
the future
legs.
From this point, though.
It is all in the future from this point, and as I was saying before, we try not to look back with too much perspective.
Yes.
Even though
that's just what you did.
Even though that's what I did. Slight tangent.
But anyway, Lex versus Bubba for the TV title. Bubba's holding the title there, I believe. Holding the TV title here. And the match was as good a match as you could probably get from Lex Luger, I would say.
What do you mean by that?
He wasn't the best worker in the world, was he? Like, he had presence, you know, he had a little bit of charisma. He was jacked to the gills. You know, he looked good in that sense, but he wasn't a workhorse, was he? Like, he's not a worker's worker, is he?
No, Lex. He's not. He's not. How come when I diss a little bit of an angle and say that it could have been better, you shit all over me and say, well, you book it then, dickhead. But you can say that Lex Luger is a shithouse all day long and it doesn't
because
matter.
Because I would say that is universally agreed upon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I loved Lex Luger when I was a kid, but like,
I can't ever remember remembering Lex Luger as a kid.
I do. Like in the early 90s, 94, basically, when Hogan was off WF television making films.
Yeah.
He was the big blonde American babyface that they were trying to strap the rocket ship to.
Yeah, and they had
and the Lex Express and...
Yeah, I know all that from looking back at it, but...
I remember it a little bit from when I was, younger, and like, because obviously he was the co-winner of the 94 Rumble, wasn't he? And like, they were really trying to go with Lex, but he just didn't have the charisma of a Hulk Hogan. He was a big, jacked, blonde babyface, but he just didn't have the charisma of the Hulkster.
Yeah, they did often have to like stick him with people, didn't he? Yeah. Didn't they? Like, he was with, obviously, he was with Sting and Macho Man on the Bash at the Beach before, even though he got knocked out of the ring.
Yeah.
And had to retire from the match early.
But anyway, it doesn't really matter the quality of the actual wrestling as such, because there was more fuckery.
There was more fuckery. Guess what's outside again?
The Outsiders.
Another limousine.
Oh my gosh.
Another limousine with the Outsiders. I will say this, Big Bubba did do it in Enziguri at one point, which I found really impressive.
He's a big athletic big man.
Yeah.
His old Ray Traylor there. Like, he... You know, he'd had his lumps by then. He'd been around for maybe 10 years, no, longer than 10 years probably by that point, and he knew how to work. For a big man, he could work his ass off. He was smooth in the ring.
Yeah, he was good. And so he was good. Lex Luger, maybe not so much so.
But the match wasn't bad, though.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't like...
I'm slagging because it's fun to be a smarky, slagging wrestling fan. Like, when I... When I went to WrestleMania in 2015, and I went to WrestleCon, and I saw Lex Luger in a wheelchair, it really upset me.
He was in a wheelchair then?
He's in a wheelchair.
Fuck, I didn't know that.
You know, yeah, Lex...
I knew he was really skinny now, but I didn't know he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, he's in a wheelchair, and yeah, that really upset me.
Yeah, that's quite sad.
Yeah, well, that's what happens to wrestlers, unfortunately, mate.
It is. Yeah. Shady end to... His well, not even after his career, a lot of shady goings on,
right?
Miss Elizabeth and all
that. Yeah, well, we won't get into that.
But yeah.
Do your own research.
Do your own research to what happened with Miss Elizabeth and Lex.
Because we ain't gonna fucking do.
In short, she died in his house. Anyway,
yeah.
So the Outsiders, they're outside again. Those crafty Outsiders, being outside and all, with their limo. They come in, they're doing their usual slow walk, sort of schmoomy, schmarzy shit. Schmoozy, smarmy shit.
Yeah.
Walking in, you know, being the NWO. They come in, then Hollywood Hulk Hogan reveals himself in all black for the first time.
My God, he is wearing black spandex, a black sleeveless tank top shirt.
He is,
and
a black
bandana.
Yep.
My God.
And he's clean shaven at this point.
Doesn't suit him, does it?
It doesn't. He would later sport a black load of stubble with his bleach one blonde thatch.
Well, that's the classic Hollywood Hollywood Hogan look.
Which
like,
look good.
Just makes him look like some kind of dirtbag George Michael or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But here, yeah. He's
also looking very small at this stage as well. We seem to have talked about wrestlers' bodies a lot in this episode. But just an observation. He looked quite small here.
Like he was more lithe and more thin, wasn't he? Well, what that was is obviously he's... A few years removed from, obviously, leaving the WWF now. And he was off steroids for quite some time.
Yeah.
Because of the whole steroid trial.
Yeah.
So he will have been cycling off steroids.
He looks a lot younger and healthier than when he was in the WWF in the 80s.
Yeah, because he was bloated and on gear.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah, whereas here, he's been filming Thunder in Paradise and Mr. Nanny, and he was looking kind of a little bit thinner and more healthier and younger than he was in, say, like 1989, when he was wrestling the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, it's true. And I said this on the first one of the series we did, the Bash at the Beach. This is my favourite incarnation of Hulk Hogan. Him as a heel, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. As a fan, I mean, I remember as a kid hating him and hating Hall and hating Nash. you know, because I was a bit like later on when I would really be into it, I was a big Sting fan.
Yeah.
So I really, and I remember as a kid being like, you know, just hating everything they did, which is obviously what they're aiming for. As a wrestling fan now, I can see that that's my favorite version of Hulk Hogan because I think he was brilliant at being a heel.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't really, I was not old enough to be part of the whole, you know, eat your vitamins and say your prayers, you sort of love.
See, I had a bit of that. I had a bit of that. In retrospect, probably not as it happened, maybe a couple of years removed, but I was that young, I didn't realise it was a couple of years removed.
Yeah.
So I kind of did grow up with Hulk Hogan as a hero.
Yeah, so whereas I didn't, but even so, as a kid, I didn't like him as Hollywood Hulk Hogan, which as an adult makes me like it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because
I appreciate
he was working you well.
Yeah, I appreciate the work.
Yeah.
That's got into it. So they come in, they interfere, they kind of tease that Big Bubba's going to be the fourth member of the NWO, but then they do a turn on him.
Yes, they do, don't they? They go like they're going to shake his hand and welcome him into the fold.
Yeah, and then they beat him up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which is...
Dastardly.
Dastardly, those bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this one? I personally found this one not as entertaining as the Nitro before.
But, obviously, it's the first time we've seen Hulk since Bash at the Beach.
It is the
so
first
time. So
it's
important.
It's a very important one, yeah.
Like, at the very, very end of it, this is when everybody's starting to come out. Like, the Steiners, the Dungeon of Doom, the Horsemen, they all kind of come out, don't they? And they're facing off at the end. And it's really starting to show this NWO versus everybody.
Yeah.
Kind of angle. Which is important, again.
Which is what they've been, not hinting at, but what they've been laying the seeds for in these first two shows off the back of the Bash at the Beach. And then this big showdown with everyone at the end is really cementing that this is them against us,
yeah,
sort of thing. And it's good. I think, because I haven't watched any further on from this, I think this is when the NWO is really going to gain momentum and it's going to be more than just little segments here and them sitting on the roof and things like this. I think this is where they're really going to gain a lot of momentum in terms of matches, in terms of more people joining them,
mm-hmm,
more screw-overs, more schmarzers, you know, things like that.
Those
and I'm looking forward to it.
NWOs, my God, you can start hating them.
Dastardly heels.
Dressed in black, like the bad guys they are, yeah, wearing denim.
Yeah. So that's we'll wrap up shortly. That's the end of that episode.
Yeah.
Monday Nitro from...
Hindsight being 2020.
15th of July 1996. Hindsight 2020. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, man.
Now, between this podcast... recording of this podcast and our next podcast, you are going to be at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that, Nick.
Well, I'm flying out in a couple of days. I am going to 7 wrestling shows in 7 days. I'd go to more if I could, but the wife wants to do some other sightseeing whilst we're in New York. I'd go to 2 wrestling shows a day, given the chance.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try and see a podcast or two whilst I'm out there as well. But I've not got my tickets for that yet. But a couple of indie shows. I've not been able to get tickets for the G1 for ROH and New Japan G1. Unfortunately, I've not been able to get tickets for that. But yeah, I'm doing Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, which is a shoot style MMA wrestling show. Featuring Josh Barnett and a lot of MMA stars, including Frank Mir, making his wrestling debut, which will be very interesting from an MMA fan like myself. And I'm also going to Pancakes and Pile Drivers, which is part of the WrestleCon Super Show. I'm going to Access, I'm going to Mania, I'm going to TakeOver, I'm going to Raw, I'm going to SmackDown.
Brilliant. I am not jealous at all. I'm going to be sat watching WrestleMania at home.
That'd be nice.
Up to the early hours of the morning. It's
how long do you reckon it's going to be?
I know exactly how long it's going to be.
Oh, do it? Yeah. Once again, Scott's got the inside scoop. How long's it going to be, Scott?
Inside scoop, as in it was published today by WWE.
Oh, I didn't read that.
So the pre-show is going to be 2 hours and 30 minutes.
2.5 hour pre-show, yep. Right.
And the main show is clocking in just over 5 hours.
Okay, so yeah.
Seven and a half hours.
Of programming
in one day that you're going to be sat through.
Well, I'm going to be there even longer, probably.
Yeah, I may skip the pre-show, depending on time and how tired I am, because obviously it's going to be very early in the morning.
So you're going to skip the cruiserweights, basically? The cruiserweights were always on the pre-show.
I might skip it, as in watching it live. Right. I might go back and watch the pre-show the next day.
Yeah.
And just join the program from when the actual main show kicks off.
Because otherwise that's your entire day.
Yeah, because it's the entire night, because it's, you know, it's...
UK, oh, yeah, you're UK, gonna, so you are going to watch it live then?
Yeah, so it's UK time, so it'll be, one, very, very tiring.
Yeah.
And two, what I don't like about these long shows is even when they're really good, we've said this before about the New Japan show that I've been to see, not live, but I went to see, and it was over 5 hours long. Even when the wrestling's so good,
just get burnt out.
By the end of it, you're just so tired, and I don't want to be tired for that main event. I want to enjoy it.
Not a bad problem to have too much wrestling, is it?
It's not a bad problem at all, but it's just it does get a little bit draining, where you're like, it should never feel like a chore going through a WrestleMania. And I think with these five-hour shows, sometimes it is starting to feel like that, which is a bit of a shame. But
I'm sure I'll battle through there.
I'm sure you'll be fine, you know, if you're there and you're in amongst all the atmosphere and whatnot.
Yeah.
Anyway,
$10 beers.
Yeah, $10 beers.
It is going to be $10 a beer.
Fuck.
And I have to carry my passport and fill out a form.
Really?
Just so I can get beers. Anybody under the age of 40 must carry passport. Can't be a driver's license either. New Jersey state law.
Wow. Well, actually, that makes me feel a bit better about not going. If you had 10 beers, that's going to cost you
$100.
$100.
And I'm going to be there for 8 hours plus, so I'm probably going to have at least that.
Wow. Yeah, well,
I'm going to spend a few quid in New York, mate. Yeah.
That's one thing I'm not gonna miss.
Mm-hmm.
$10 beers. I do have. I will give you this at some point before you go. I do have a couple of recommendations of bars in New York where you can get $3 beers.
I know one. I don't know if the missus will be up for it. There's a place called Rudy's. Where you get $3 beers and a free hot dog with every beer.
See, that sounds amazing. Yeah, get yourself in
I'm
there.
I'm taking you for dinner, love.
Get yourself
some PBR and a free hot dog.
Yeah. You go. Yeah, she has one hot dog, you have six and six pints.
Yep.
Sounds good. Right, anyway, we'll wrap up the show there. All social media info I'm going to just drop in about now-ish, because it's all changed, because we are no longer the Can't Heat Wrestling Podcast. We are now called the Fabulous Heel Nerds Wrestling Podcast, available on the Arameta Network, as it always was, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, and many more.
Many more.
There's going to be more. Okay, yes. So...
But where you can... I mean, most of the people who listen to this, they know us already.
Yeah.
So shout us out. We'll shout you out. We like you.
Yeah, a good thing to do, which really helps podcasts, is if you like wrestling and you like this podcast and you have a friend or family member who likes wrestling and likes podcasts, just give them a recommendation.
Yeah, we'd like that.
And that'd be good. And yeah, so we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.